You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, September 29th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to the podcast. Get this bad boy once it drops. We will talk to Robert Walker, legendary Las Vegas bookmaker, coming up later on in the show. He booked big bets for a long time at the Stardust and the Mirage, two meccas of Las Vegas sports booking. He took huge wagers on Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield, the first fight when Holyfield pulled the upset. Robert and I also talk about how big election wagering would be across this country. Massive, just massive. And even massive isn't the right word. So a great conversation with Robert Walker, who currently works for U.S. Bookmaking. That'll be coming up later on in the show. Presbyterian, giddy up. Did you catch the final score last Saturday? We've been talking about this. Got it from Vegas Rick before their first line game. Only two games have been lined now. 72-0, 63-43. I was keeping tabs on that game while I'm at Fenway Park with my brother and our friend PJ. We went to Yankees Sox on Saturday, the day Stanton hit the grand slam that hasn't landed yet. But I'm following that game. It's Presbyterian and Dayton. Total opened 65.5, and I said, bet it when it posts. Well, Saturday by kickoff, over under 73. It's 27-3 Presbyterian after the first quarter. 35-23 Dayton at the half, 63-30 Dayton after three. That's 93 points. The total closed 73. Final, 63-43. That is 106 points. 33 points over the closing number. Vegas Rick says, I don't know how you make a total on this game accurately. We have never seen anything like this in college football, where a team doesn't have a punter. They go for it almost every single time on fourth down, unless they're backed up against their own end zone. And after they score, onside kick. Dayton scored 28 in the second quarter and the third quarter. 56 points in the middle, quarters two and three. The game is like on cocaine. Presbyterian, unfortunately, off this weekend, but they'll be back, and we will be on the over. Big story here in New England, Brady Belichick, Sunday night. My advice has been simple. If you like Tampa Bay, lay the 6.5 because you know it's getting to 7. Some of you looking for a teaser leg and you like Tampa, maybe tease that thing from 7 down to 1. I'm not on the Tampa side. I don't love Tampa in the spot, despite how great Tom Brady has been. I saw Joe Osborne put this up. Great follow if you're looking for big stats and big trends. Osborne was giving the record for Brady teams off a loss. Going back to 2005, Tom Brady's teams have gone 40-10 straight up, 36-14 ATS following a loss. Joe Osborne at JTFOZ. Still think the number's too high. Think of where it was in the preseason. I remember the Superbook in Vegas had a look-ahead number before the season, Tampa Bay -3.5. The look-ahead number last week, the 12-day number at the Superbook, Tampa Bay -5.5. Market reopened Sunday night, 6. By Monday, Tuesday, 6.5. And now the 7s are starting to pop. I've got the screen up here late on a Wednesday night. 6.5 Circa, 6.5 Westgate, 6.5 South Point. And the 7s are popping. Caesars, DraftKings, Pinnacle, BetOnline, Heritage, all 7. I imagine that's going to keep climbing. I don't know that we get to 7.5. I really don't. I don't think we get there. Because then the books are going to get middled. They land 7. Chaos. I think this will probably close Tampa Bay -7, -120. They'll try and entice those Patriot bettors +7 even money. That's my guess. But please, if you have a 6.5 and you like the Patriots, just wait. This was on an episode of Chicken Dinner in August with Ed Sammons. He talked about for the Sunday night games, the lines have to be higher because there's always a ton of liability with the parlays during the week. Ed said on the show, games like that, you always want to inflate that line because you know what you're going to get. Plus, the bettors are going to fire parlays all day long on Sunday and throw in Tampa Bay. Straight, money line, all the parlays that are still alive are going to roll to Tampa Bay. Spread, money line. And the exposure is insane. Ed also said at that time, he expects the Sunday Night Football game between the Bucs and the Patriots to be the highest bet NFL game of the year to that point because of the matchup. Fucking Good Morning America is out here. They're at Foxborough already. Today's show's coming. Everybody's talking about this game. Everybody's going to bet this game because it's Brady. And you look at the bet counts right now, lopsided as hell. 90% of the tickets on the Buccaneers at most places, over 90% of the money. This is going to run. And if you like the Patriots, just take a 7. You probably get +100, +105. That's my advice. There are some rumblings about some weapons for Brady not being available. I'm going to try and confirm those tomorrow. If I had to make a play on the game, I'd probably go under 49.5. Because if there's a guy or two that aren't near 100%, those are Brady's weapons inside the 20. That's the early lean. And I'll probably have to pick this game for Nesson, which I understand. I'm not touching the side. Here's another nugget for you. Belichick as a home dog all time, 12-6 against the number. Last year they had outright upsets against Baltimore and Arizona. Baltimore was a 7-point favorite. Arizona was a 1.5, 2-point favorite. It's different with Brady. I get it. But for those of you that think Brady's going to come in here and just light this team up for 400 yards and 6 touchdowns, I don't think that's going to happen. Belichick could take the opening kick, have a 7-8 minute drive, run the ball, punt it, pin him deep. Brady, jittery, nerves. Brady's a slow starter. He's a great finisher, but doesn't mean he's going to come in here and win by 21. I know the books are going to need the Patriots, but I don't really like a side. That's where I'm at on the game. As for the props, have you seen some of these? PointsBet was first on Tuesday. PointsBet's got all kinds of stuff. Here are a couple. Number of players to catch a touchdown pass from Tom Brady. 0, 22-1. One player, 6-1. 2, the favorite, -10. 3 players, 3-1. 4+, 10-1. Buccaneers currently have a team point total of about 28.5. That implies Tampa gets about 3 touchdowns, a couple field goals. Maybe it's 4 touchdowns and 1 field goal. It's on you, though, to determine how many touchdowns are through the air and how many different receivers haul in a score. Again, 2 players catching touchdowns. That's favored -110 at PointsBet. Will Brady throw a touchdown to Gronk? Yes, +140. Did you see what happened to Gronk on Sunday night? He took a shot to the midsection against the Rams. If he can go, I don't expect him to be anywhere near his usual self inside the red zone. I wouldn't waste my money there. And this one is a total gamble. I'm not going to handicap this one. I'll just give you the number. Brady rushing yards, over under 0.5. You need the Patriots' rush defense to pitch a shutout. In 3 games, Brady has rushed for no yards, 6 yards, 14 yards, in order. Remember, though, if Brady's on 2 and he comes out to kneel down near midfield, takes a knee to end the game, that's 0 and you lose. DraftKings has a couple other ones. Which Tampa Bay player will catch the record-breaking pass from Tom Brady? Evans and Godwin, +350. Gronk, 4. Brown, 5. Giovanni Bernard, 7-1. Fournette, 8-1. Tyler Johnson, 9. Cameron Brate, 10. O.J. Howard, 10-1. That one's interesting. That's an interesting prop. Brady, passing yards in the first quarter, over under 67.5. That would get him the record. Over, minus 225. Under, plus 175. Lean under for reasons I talked about earlier. Might not have the ball. Might have it for 4 or 5 minutes, one drive. That's a lot of juice on the over. There's no way in hell I'm laying minus 225 on a first quarter prop. Nerves and jitters could easily play a factor. That's a pretty good plus price on the under. What if Brady just hands the ball off for the first couple plays, hits a guy for play action down the field, 40 yards, they score a touchdown? You need 30 more yards, 28 to be exact. But if they kick it back to New England, like, there's no urgency in the first quarter. I'd go under on that one. I also had Jay Croucher from PointsBet, trading director, hook me up with a prop. Entertainment only on the post-game embrace. Is it a hug? Is it a handshake? Is it a blow-by? No embrace. Jay said the hug is a heavy, heavy favorite. Minus 900 he would make it, which implies 90%. Handshake, 9 to 1, 10%. He said no embrace is off the board. I thought that was fun. 90% chance they hug? I don't know. And these aren't bets you can make, although I did tweet this out at SP Shoot, and people are like, yo, give me the handshake. 9 to 1. Love the value. If Brady loses, do you think he's going to embrace Belichick? I don't know. I don't know. But that's an example of what one bookmaker would make the number. Early plays got him in on Twitter. Ole Miss plus 15. Been talking about that for weeks. Matt Corral can throw, can run. Lane Kiffin, up-tempo offense. I don't think Alabama is going to get a lot of stops in this game. So I like Ole Miss. Georgia, no issue laying this number. I made the game 23-24. Market, actually, I think it circa, it opened Georgia 20. Let me check that real quick. The market was pretty much 19, and now we're seeing a lot of money on Arkansas, 83% of the tickets, 88% of the money. Metcalf and those guys at circa opened it. Actually, they opened it 18. And the initial push came on Georgia to 20, and then some buyback on Arkansas down to 19. But here you're looking at the screen. Georgia's minus 19 at most places, and the 18.5s at Westgate, South Point, DraftKings, Caesars, offshore, minus 18.5, plus 100, and minus 105. So I think Georgia's defense is too good, and that offense will just run them down. I think this game could be 38-14 easily at Georgia. Arkansas played from behind against Rice. Okay, give them credit. Arkansas is undefeated. Give them credit. This is a major step up in competition. And I like the Ravens plus the one. Not a bartender fade. We'll get to that guy in a little bit. I just think the injuries eventually are going to catch up. You're talking about players that matter for Denver. KJ Hamler blew his knee. He's out. Jerry Jeudy already out. On the other side of the ball, no Bradley Chubb yet. He's still on injured reserve. Josie Jewell is out, linebacker. Ronald Darby, secondary, out. You can beat shitty teams. Hello? Denver, 3 wins. Giants, Jags, Jets. Who set up that schedule? Now you got to face Lamar Jackson, who has been electric. Yards per play, yards per pass, yards per rush. That guy's good, man. I don't think that they're going to stop him all that easily. And I like my advantage, Jim Harbaugh over Vic Fangio in this game. I really like the Ravens in this spot, catching one. I think it's going to close, pick them. Maybe it closes Ravens minus one. I already seen some pick them, Circa and Westgate. Pick 'em, Bet Online. Pick 'em, Heritage. I like Baltimore for sure. Here's one that I'm really hoping to be on if we get the information we need. Tennessee getting 3 at Missouri, college football. We're hearing the quarterback Hendon Hooker has been practicing and that he's likely a go for the Vols, likely available. if you search Hendon Hooker, you don't really hear much about what's going on. Josh Heupel's like, yeah, like we hope he can play. It sounds like a coin flip. We're here and he's going to go. Just to give you an idea, Hooker, so far this year, 46 for 70. That's 66%. 613 yards, 7 touchdowns, 1 pick. Joe Milton, 20 for 43. 47% completion, 243 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. If Hooker's a go, clearly a better player. And Tennessee has played some tough teams already. Pittsburgh, Florida. Missouri's played nobody. Nobody. They barely put away Boston College with a backup quarterback. I don't like this Missouri team. I'm sorry. I'm not seeing it. You look at their record. All right, give them a little bit of credit. They're 2-2, but really, who have they played? Central Michigan, at Kentucky, Southeast Missouri State, at Boston College, Tennessee, tougher team, tougher schedule, and likely QB1 going to give it a go. So waiting to hear about Tennessee, and hopefully Hendon Hooker will be able to play. Lean Iowa, Friday night. Sharp move on +4, +3.5. That's fine. Buy low Iowa, -3. I have no problem running it back there. Lean in Notre Dame, +2 at home against Cincinnati. That defense, especially the line, has been playing insane. Cincinnati, I don't think Cincinnati's anything special. On the NFL side, lean to the Panthers. The 5's pretty much all gone. They're at Dallas. Nice spot for Carolina. They played last Thursday. So they get the extra rest and take on a Dallas team that just played Monday night, divisional game. That could be a field goal either way. I like Carolina. Lean to the Chargers Monday night at home against the Raiders. And I know this will be a play that everybody's on, but Kansas City -7 at Philly. Man, they could win that game big. They are so due. That'll be a square side. I almost don't care. That's a game where you could look up and Kansas City's up 35-7 at one point, 35-10. Their defense hasn't been great, but Philly's offense, especially inside the red zone, that Sirianni, he reminds me of Matt Nagy. Can't stay out of his own way. I don't want to overreact to a small sample size, but man, play calling is everything. And sometimes a play caller's worst nightmare is himself. They ran a wide receiver reverse on like second and goal at the 5. Come on. Go straight. Don't go sideways. Go straight. Baseball futures are interesting. Looking at a couple things here, I always like to look at OddsBoom. OddsBoom.com, they do your work for you. They give you the best market prices. I think my answers are different if you were to say, who do you like in the World Series and who do you like in the American League per se? World Series number, Yankees, you could find a 18-1 at Fox Bet. Best number in the world on the Yankees. Look at other places. MGM, Yankees, 12-1. Superbook, 12-1. DraftKings, 12-1. Borgata, 12-1. 12-1 at Points Bet. 13 at FanDuel. 13 at Bet365. Fox Bet, 18-1. Now, those numbers could be different by the time you listen, but if you're looking at a World Series number, I think that Yankee number at 18-1 is pretty enticing. AL pennant, though, White Sox, +350. Not high on the Astros. Not high on the Rays. Not really high on any of those teams. I could see any of those teams winning the AL pennant. White Sox got some thumpers in that lineup, and they're finally getting healthy. National League, Brewers, +340. I'm not going to tell you to take the Dodgers to win the pennant, +180. Brewers, pitching staff, +340. But we're also on the Braves. I got the Braves to win the World Series, which I'm hoping to sell one of those tickets. I got 2 future tickets on the Braves. Just too bad Acuna's not in there and Ozuna's not there anymore either. But those are the teams I think have numerical value. Doesn't mean that they're going to win, but those are some teams that stick out. Yankees, 18-1 World Series. White Sox, +350 for the pennant. National League, Brewers, +340. White Sox, Brewers, anybody? I don't know. It's baseball, man. Anything can happen. The bartender is 4-1. How the he swept on Sunday. Two public plays. Denver, -10.5, easy. Green Bay, +3. Or did he take 3.5? I don't remember. Didn't matter. They won the game outright. This guy's walking on water right now. 80% through five games. 4-1. After going 32% all last season. Regression is coming, you would think. And I'm telling you, I think he's serious. He might bet the Broncos until that well dries up. We'll be heads up, that's for sure. He said he was going to do it, and I think he's going to stick to it. So we'll hear from the bartender, I don't know, Friday, Saturday. He made picks late last week, but you never know with that guy. He's such a wild card. 4 out of 5, though, in the NFL. He's better than I am at this point. Last thing. I recorded all these interviews in Las Vegas in two separate channels on a portable recorder. For all you audio heads, those handheld recorders, they record one person in the left channel and the other person in the right channel. Go figure, the Robert Walker episode was the only one that didn't take on both levels. So when I opened it up in Adobe Audition, I have the left channel, which is supposed to be yours truly, blank, gone, RIP. Right channel is Robert Walker, and then I'm so loud naturally that you can sort of hear me in the background. It's like when you watch a documentary and the guest of honor is mic'd up and the producer is asking questions off camera, off mic. That's what it sounds like. I did my best to sort of jimmy with the levels, raise mine up a bit, dropped Walker's down a bit, doubled the file. I did the best I could. It took me about 45 minutes to fix this. Understand, it's not the way it usually is, but I promise, Robert's stories are worth it.
We are at U.S. Bookmaking Chicken Dinner, sitting down with Robert Walker. First question is very easy. Do you miss the juice of the day-to-day in a casino? Because this is not like your typical sports book right here.
No, it's you're removed. You're right. You kind of have that. I don't have that thrill like when you're in a book on a Sunday and you hear the audience go crazy. But I'll tell you what, the greatest thing that ever happened to me when I was at the Stardust or the Mirage was when you heard dead silence. Then you know you're having a great day. Just hey, I don't hear anything, so nobody scored. And then the opposite is when the crowd erupts and you can't even hear yourself think. You know it's going to be a bad outcome for you.
The worst. I can only envision you right now, 1998, sitting in the back of the book, rooting for the dog on Sunday night, and the dog's down 21-0.
Yeah, that's just brutal. And nobody ever feels for the bookmaker, you know. I mean, I think everybody says, well, you know, to become a bookmaker, you have to be able to cry. And I can cry with the best of them because I'm just, you're never going to be happy, right? But nobody has any sympathy for us. So we have a bad day. It's like nobody cares. You know, it's just, so what?
It's funny you say that because I was with Chris Andrews the other day. I've been kind of rolling around town talking to all you guys. And he said that at Art's party, all you guys did was bitch.
Yeah, well, I mean, I often say this, that even if we held 100%, I'd be complaining about the handle. I'd be like, oh, yeah, but look at the volume was terrible, you know. So it's just one of those businesses you're just never going to be happy. I will tell you what, I've been relieved when it looks like it's every favorite starting to roll in and the favorites and the totals are going over, and then you finally get that one dog that saves you for the day. That's about as good as it gets because you still lost, but it was an Armageddon, and you're like, okay, I feel better. It's funny because I feel better on those days than I do on days where we have really good days because I'm always lamenting the game that we lost that really cost us a great day.
I don't cry for the bookmaker, but I do sometimes. I feel compassion for the bookmaker because you can go and you've made a lot of money for a lot of places, but there could be that bad week or bad 2 weeks or bad month. The people upstairs, they're not as compassionate.
Well, it's funny because and at the Mirage and even at the Stardust, we took seven-figure bets. And if we lost them, they'd go out in the pit, theoretically, and you know, give it all back in the pit. But, you know, when you're doing your reviews 6 months later or a year later, they never remember. That's the reason why you lost that seven figures or whatever, because you took a bet from this person. So you had to have all that ammunition when you go in there. But I think the hard thing about being a bookmaker, especially on an NFL, is when you just get torched on Sunday, and then that means Monday is going to be terrible because you Monday's already a bad day because all the parlays rolling in, you know, everything's paying, you know, 10-1 to 100-1, and then you roll in and you have to have the same energy and enthusiasm to put up next week's game that you do when when you win on Monday, you feel like I'm a genius, I'm bouncing in here, I can't wait to put next week's games up. And conversely, when you get just hammered, you got to do the same thing, and it's just, you just got to let it, you got to be like a reliever. You just got to let it go and just tee up the next weekend.
How long did it take you to realize you just have to trust your numbers and not get too emotional?
I learned it early, but I haven't been able to put it in practice. So that's the problem. I just haven't, I sweat the games out still. I know you can't sweat. The very first thing they told me was don't sweat the games out. And I said, I know I can't sweat the games out. And yet it's funny because if all we have is WNBA and they're $500 decisions, I want to win those games, you know. It's really, there's something wrong, I think. I think maybe it comes with the territory or people that are like that migrate towards this because it's just a business where, you know, you trade money most of the time and you have to live with those ups and downs, but it's just the wins are never enough to offset the losses. You know, I mean, every bookmaker you talk to, we only remember the losses. I know we won games strangely. You don't ever remember those, though. But the ones you lost on crazy plays at the end of the game, or you're going in for a touchdown and they fumble and it's run back the other way, and or a game falls. You know, we lost nearly $1 million on a game that fell 12 one year. And you don't bounce back from that.
I can see it in your face.
Yeah, I don't. I just can't bounce back for it. Even though that's years away and that money's already gone and I'm not even working in that company anymore, it still bothers me. It still aggravates me to this day.
Can you remember the value of the biggest loss, or the biggest decision?
Well, when I first got to the Mirage, we were buried on Holyfield against Tyson. And I wasn't prepared for the kind of volume that the Mirage did. The Bellagio was open up, I believe, or they were just getting ready to open up. But they just wrote so much money there. The bets were huge. So, you know, they would take 20, 30, 40, 50,000 on an 8-1 shot, where at the Stardust, we didn't have those type of limits. So we were stuck, you know, seven figures when I got there. And I think that's one of the greatest bookmaking jobs I did. I think I had booked it so we're going to lose no matter what happened. I don't think there was anything that could have happened where we could have won. No, I said our best case scenario is we lose 80,000, I think. It was just, it was really, if you broke that down, I'd probably be out of the industry right now because they say that's just such. But they opened it like 25-1 or so, a 20-1 favorite on Tyson. And it seemed like the right number, but if you look at it now, you don't see numbers like that anymore because we've all said, listen, if we think it should be 20-1, it's going to be 8-1 or 6-1 because we need to get that favorite play because the public, every $10 bet at the Stardust was on Holyfield, but every $5,000 bet at the Mirage was on Holyfield, and and then the worst case scenario was Tyson getting knocked out. So we lost so much money that night that the computer couldn't go. It was Vic's computer, and CBS. We couldn't even go that high. Nobody thought that you could lose more than $1 million in one night, and I was happy to prove them wrong, you know. So.
Oh man, I didn't want to come in here and like have a therapy session with you, but I mean, this stuff is fascinating. I compare your example with Holyfield and Tyson. You saw the same thing. This stuff is all. This shit is cyclical. The same thing happened with Mayweather and McGregor. Not the same thing, but the similar thing where all the public bets were on McGregor and all the big money was on Mayweather. But in boxing specifically, the public loves the underdog.
Especially, I shouldn't say especially because when it was in Nevada, if the fight was in Vegas, it was automatic. You shaded the dog big time because you knew everybody was going to be on the underdog. If the fight was not in Vegas, it was different because the public didn't get involved. They didn't get excited. They weren't here to watch it. So if it wasn't in Vegas, then they would bet the favorite. But if it's in Vegas, you're just buried on. I did make one mistake that I think it was the Mayweather-Hatton fight. I can't remember, but it was the weirdest fight because on Thursday and Friday, when all the UK guys got here, we just got pounded on Hatton. And I remember telling my boss that, you know, we're going to need Mayweather for a ton. And then I don't think we took another Hatton bet from Friday night on. It was nothing but Mayweather. And the companies in Mayweather won, you know, for fun. And, well, not for fun, but won. And And my boss said, I thought you said we needed. I'm like, yeah, that was on Friday. So that's, things change, man. You just, it was just the weirdest thing. They just, you know, I don't want to lump people together, but I think they whatever money they brought to bet, they bet it right then and there. They didn't wait until Saturday night, and every large wager after that was on. And that's really not typical of how boxing goes.
If I were to say, okay, give me a Mount Rushmore of guys that just attracted dollars. Tyson's on that. Tyson fought, people bet, right? Brady brings out handle. People bet on or against Brady. Those would be two guys that I would put on mine, I think. But, you know, who are some names that come to mind years past that just when they played or their teams played, you guys got action?
Well, as far as action one way or the other, I think boxing is probably the best example. I think De La Hoya brought everybody out. I mean, it, by far one of the most popular fighters. If he fought, it was going to be a big event. And I don't think you have anybody like that now, you know. And obviously Tyson was in that category.
Is it any sport though, not just boxing?
No, I'm just saying those are the ones that absolutely come to mind. I mean, Jordan was huge. I mean, he was must-see TV, and everybody wanted to bet him. Especially, you know, when he was playing. We took the biggest bets I can remember on future bets, series bets, you know, in the NBA championship. And, you know, that was one of the funnier ones I had. We just got absolutely annihilated on the Bulls to beat the Jazz one year. And my son, who was about 13 at the time, said, didn't you know that the Bulls were better than the Jazz? I'm like, I did, but they're, you know, they're 8-1. I mean, what do you want me to do? I can't just put up 20-1 on them. So, I mean, it was just, you know, those are the three that obviously stand out. I'm trying to think of you know, it's really, I would say more than players, it's teams when they get really good, when the Niners were really good, you know, when the Packers were really good. I mean, and they just bury us on them every single week.
Lakers.
Dodgers right now has been a problem for the last couple years, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, and once again, we're on the West Coast, so it's a West Coast proximity thing. So I just think it's really teams when, you know, when the Yankees were really good, you know, people just bet on them all the time. So
I'm trying to think, now I've got my wheels spinning on Jordan, because we didn't have the markets we had. Well, we didn't have the markets we had now back then, but you couldn't bet on Jordan's points, rebounds, and assists, right? I mean, that wasn't really...
No, we didn't have that. I mean, we didn't even know about... You know, it really is the... I think of anything, the props is really unique because it's taken off. I mean, the first one was, you know, I think Vaccaro put up, will Refrigerator Perry score a touchdown? And you can only bet yes. You know, there was no opposite of it. Some, you know, which drives me crazy about some books, you should always be able to bet the no. You know, people put up, you know, where they hit a home run, but you're not allowed to bet the no. You know, so basically, you know, you probably got a pretty poor number if you can only bet the yes, because it's a one-sided prop. But that started, and then, you know, then it got busier every week until now. You know, the Super Bowl is just a, you know, it's just a mad rush to put up the stupidest props that you can think of. And we basically got out of that business because nobody would bet them unless we made a mistake. And we found out that, so the ratio to the mistakes we were making to the actual handle was, you know, we were making a lot of mistakes, you know, because you're putting up crazy props.
Well, you make the mistakes because you're putting up too many props. The more props you put up, the more liable you are somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, when guys, you know, sophisticated players come up, they stand in line and they have your prop sheet, you're like, Okay. Yeah, so you would just say, listen, there was a few players, and I would say, there are some guys that this is all they do is bet these Super Bowl props and any type of props. And we would just say, yeah, we tanked that one. But mostly we would write down, okay, we wrote no bets on this prop. You know, let's don't. And I've always said, you know, I don't want somebody to have a calculator, you know, the $20 player. You don't want to have them calculator trying to figure out, you know, percentages to see if they're winning their bet. You want to make it as easy as possible so they can have a good time. But it's really gotten out of hand. I mean, it's actually nuts now. So
that Jordan prop, if he's playing in an NBA Finals game, his point prop has to start at 38.5.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it was a different defense back then. I mean, look at the totals back then were much lower than they are today.
'93, he averaged like 44 points a game.
Yeah.
In finals.
Well, look what he would have done now. I mean, now you can't touch him. You know, it's not like as bad as a wide receiver, but I mean, you know, the totals now are in the 200s, 220s, and back then they were in the, you know, him with the Pistons were in the probably 190s. I'm guessing, I can't remember exactly, but they're much lower than they
are. That sounds right. I do love sometimes when you get the new sports betting journalist that will, you know, fan an idea, right? Hey, Robert, what's the line between the 2017 Warriors and the 93 Knicks?
You can't even compare. Well, the athletes today are just, they're so superior in every category.
Well,
because
the three-point shot.
Well,
I mean, like,
but the training's better, too. The training's different. The nutrition's different. I mean, you can just see when, like, even in the Olympics, how they're breaking records left and right. Just remove the juice part of it, right? Hopefully, and it's just they're just better. They're just trained better, and they have better, doctors. Everything's better nowadays. Every team now would kill the teams back then. But if you could take those players back then and move them to this era, well, then now you got something. But I don't know how you compare. It's just too hard to do. They're all so good. That's why I look at it.
Alabama against the Jets. Go.
No, but it's funny because we do get that question all the time.
I know.
You know, and there's no NFL team that could lose to a college team. I don't care what college team it was, but
what's the number?
Yeah, I know. Well, to me, it's so frivolous. It's like, you know, I don't like to bash anybody, but I mean, doing Oscar odds and stuff like that, I'm like, why? You're a sports book. That's not sports. You know, I don't get it. And you can't take a bet on it, so it doesn't matter what you say. I know it gives you lots of publicity, but I don't ever get that. I feel like I put enough frivolous events up now that we're actually taking bets on. I don't need to actually make it even harder. So
you take a Little League?
No.
Oh, you draw the line at Little League?
No, well, the gaming does. I mean, I would definitely draw the line at Little League. I would definitely draw the line at high school, 18 and under soccer. I don't want any part of any of that stuff. But the thing about it is it's the problem that we have, no matter what, is people are booking that stuff. I mean, people are taking 18 and under leagues in Europe. I mean, the Europeans book it. So you have some pressure, you know, just like ping pong. Everybody was booking ping pong. We wouldn't do it. And I just said, I don't know enough. You know, we're protecting our partners. You know, we're managing their risk for them. And I don't know enough. I wouldn't know if a ping pong game was fixed or not because it all looks crazy to me. So I don't know,
yeah. You
know, or worse, did they even play? Did they even play that event? I don't know. You know, we said we're not interested in it. I know some people made some money off it. Some people bet, but... you know, we just move on and book the events that we know a little bit about.
I still believe that if Nevada could take bets on elections, it would be the biggest thing handled.
Oh yeah,
nothing.
But see, that's where you could do par mutual because we wouldn't be in the risk. It would just be peer to peer. No, you'd write more on the election than anything else.
Imagine how much you would have written on Hillary
right.
and Trump.
Yeah. Oh no, it would have been unbelievable.
In any election, and then you could do props off elections. You could do. You know, with the states and, you know, yes.
Oh, you'd have to have all, you'd have all 50 states easily. And then
you take bets for 4 years.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, how is that not a thing? Is it just gaming? Gaming doesn't want to do it? I mean, you have no say in it. But
yeah, I think gaming's just, it's not a sporting event is what they would say. We went way back in the day, when I was at the Mirage, we went to gaming and asked them if we could do over-under on the close of the Dow. Each Friday.
Oh, okay.
And they said, get the hell out of here. So we did.
You got to move to the island.
Yeah, they're like, you know, we said, why? You know, it's a way people could hedge their risk maybe, you know. But they just said they weren't interested. And, you know, Nevada gaming has been, you know, Nevada is not on the cutting edge of anything. You know, we're on the, we're so far behind. That's why, you know, we basically, because Nevada is so far behind, we've allowed the Europeans to come in and take over the sportsbook industry. And I think, you know, we're making some strides in that direction. But, I mean, we had no, you know, we really didn't do in-game wagering. They had been doing it for years. We didn't do a lot of pre-market automation where we had, you know, many events, you know, hundreds of events, exact scores. We could never do that. We didn't know what the numbers would be and how would we move it. We had none of that. So I think we're just now getting into the... late 1990s is what I think that we're in right now.
I had people that work there, you know, I do sports betting, and I work with salespeople, and I work with marketing, and PR, and studio, and all that. And, like, they're curious, right? And one of the people at work actually asked me the other day, can you bet on the weather? The temp, like, could you bet on what degree it would be? Could you bet on will it rain or not? And the questions are dead serious.
Right.
I'm sort of laughing internally. I'm like, no, you can't bet on the weather, but I wonder how that would look.
Well, there would be a market for it. There's no doubt. The problem with rain is it one drop? Is it So, I mean,
you got to put it all in the bottom on the fine print.
Yeah, that's the problem, is you can never have enough fine print, though.
Well, it's the high today in Vegas. Let's make it 112 and a half. And if it touches 113, it's the over.
And you would just have, but you'd have to say, listen, this is what we use. We use the National Weather Service as the official number, because if somebody's going to say, no, listen, I read that in the Henderson, it was 111 and a half, and I should get paid. It's the same thing with this, you know, this last election. I mean, would people that voted for Trump say, no, hold on, it's still under, you know? And so, I mean, you just would not have enough. I mean, the House rules have gotten longer and longer because something crazy always happens where we have to address it. And this year, you know, the last, with this, them going to seven-inning games and the doubleheaders kind of throwing us for a loop, we chose last year, we don't do listed pitchers anymore. So if you bet it, you have action on the game, the run line, the total, doesn't matter who pitches. And that's brought up some drama as well, as you can imagine. But it's in our House rules. But, you know, nobody reads those House rules until there's a problem. And they go, oh, okay, you know. But nobody willingly goes reads those rules.
I want to go back to the European comment you made about them coming in and being taken over a lot. It boils my blood, man, when I see these sports books post, hey, send us your winning parlays. Or, you know, now some of these books, they send push notifications to their customers. And it's like, hey, did you make your 18 parlay today? Did you make your single game parlay? I'm like, how do books do that? You're literally telling them to parlay, and everybody knows that parlay's kill.
More ways to win. That's what it's all about.
Oh, God, but it's supposed to be about education and explaining why parlays aren't a good idea. Some of these places are giving you notifications. Hey, come on down and parlay.
Well, that push marketing is the next. I mean, that's just really, what is that, Google, Facebook? I mean, it's just all the algorithms that they have,
it's
right? They know.
They can do that.
Yeah. I'm not sports related, but the other day I was looking at a pillow. I wanted to see, what is the best latex pillow? And now it's on every site that I go to. I'm like, how is it possible? It doesn't matter what I go to. If I go to ESPN, there's the latex pillow. I'm like, what the heck? And so that's what's going on here on the sports betting. So the thing about it is there's a group of people that, you know, and that's the whole thing is if you want to have fun, it's the only way you can turn $5 into $100, right? Because people say, how can I, you know, turn $2 into $1 million? Well, it's not going to be on straight bets. It's not going to be on straight bets. So I think there's that group, but they got to be prepared to lose that money, right, as opposed to straight bets. And then there's a group that wants to make a living, and then there's everybody in between that group, right? And that's the problem with sports betting. But at the end of the day, sports betting should just be, it enhances your enjoyment of watching the game. That's all at the end of the day that it is. It's just recreation. It's entertainment. It's another form of entertainment. You're into the game, whether your bet's $5 or if it's $1,000, you're probably going to be into the game more than you would be. And that's why I think sports betting, but it's gotten away from that. If you look at Twitter, it's all about, I'm sophisticated, I'm going to be a wise guy, they're cutting me down. You know, and it's that market. You know, I call it Joel the Plumber thing, where if I ever do get a job, I want to make sure I don't have to pay taxes, you know, or if I ever become an owner.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem with sports betting now is, it's gotten away from its roots, which is just, it just enhances the game. And if you have a $10 bet on, I say it all the time, on a game, you're into that game, you know, and but it shouldn't be enough money where it hurts you if you lose. It should be just about having fun.
Last thing, NFL, get ready, to rock and roll. It's the biggest monster in gambling, the NFL. What do you not need this year? What are you rooting against?
Well, I mean, right now, because of our proximity, we have some liability exposure on the Cowboys. It's surprisingly, they're betting the Buccaneers still, and I didn't like them last year. I hated them last year. I said they have no shot. That's why I shouldn't say anything, because right when I said that, I should have went out and bet them, you know, because I did not like the Buccaneers at all to win it last year.
They were the fifth seed. They were dogs in the last three games of the playoffs.
And there's no way they beat the Chiefs. I had to watch it again to even believe it, because the Chiefs just seem to play their worst game of the year.
Well, offensive line is cooked.
Yeah, no doubt. So, obviously, you know, the Chiefs are a problem for us every week. The Buccaneers are a problem for us every week, just as you can imagine. And if Dak comes back, the Cowboys will be our biggest, like they were last year. The Cowboys, when Dak was playing, were our biggest liability almost every week. And when he didn't play, we needed the Cowboys every week. I mean, they're our biggest bet every week. So, and I'm sure that's true of a lot of these proximity platforms and sports books. We see what New Mexico State, when they're bad in football, and they are bad in football, by the way. Our biggest decisions are, we need New Mexico and New Mexico State. you know, and it's just,
there is a place to be.
You know, that's a two-team parlay.
Come
you don't.
On, Lobo!
Yeah, you don't want to root for that two-team parlay every week. I mean, that's rough. It's rough stuff.
Oh, I could have done this for another hour with you, Robert Walker, U.S. Bookmaking at Robert USF Sports. Thanks for having us here, and always appreciate talking to you.
Oh, thanks for stopping by. I appreciate it.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Robert Walker, one of the greatest to talk to. The story's endless. So good to talk to Robert in Las Vegas. Record check for us, 169, 166, and 5. We are still up, barely, 0.3 units. 66, 56, and 3 all-time in football, plus 5.8. And we've got three pending. Ole Miss, plus 15. Georgia, minus 18.5. Ravens, plus the 1. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you Friday right here on Chicken Dinner.
My brother told me so. You'll be the greatest man alive.